I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Please be advised. This podcast contains explicit language and mature themes.
This is The Shadows. Episode 6. End. Whatever we permit ourselves, we are forbidding ourselves something else. All of our ideals for ourselves, our aims, our aspirations, our beliefs, are by definition restrictive. Unforbidden pleasures. Adam Phillips.
Caitlin, where do you want to sit? Caitlin, where do you want to sit?
Chair?
Right
where
here,
my
Mom.
Place?
This makes sense.
Mrs. Prest, is there anything I can do to help out?
Oh, you can call her Nancy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, call me Nancy, please.
Yeah, you're going to make us feel old. Yeah.
Charlie is the type of person that parents love.
Nancy.
I have teachers. Isn't that how you go?
We're at my parents' place for dinner.
Mr. and Mrs., it's true. And Greg's called Sir most of the time, but not by me.
We meet eyes across the table. Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
It's over.
I know.
You do? I have these thoughts multiple times a day.
I'm cleaning my shelf out, okay? Can I keep this shirt?
Yeah, of course. Okay. But you don't need to do that right now. You can leave stuff.
I do need to do that.
And then, only a few hours after such a fantasy, I have another one.
One moment, dear. I have to go in and take the chicken out of the oven. I love you.
It goes back and forth. Waking up with the breakup fantasy.
I'm leaving you.
No!
Going to bed with the old age together fantasy.
Do you think we'll have enough money to put our second kid through school?
I don't know. I hope so.
I don't say a word about these thoughts to anyone. Sometimes I wonder if that's what long-term monogamous relationships are built on. Not letting yourself think certain things. Not letting certain words about your partner escape your mouth. Knowing that by thinking it or saying it, that it's the beginning of feeling it and acting on it.
Whoa, what's up?
Nothing, I'm just late right now. And I need to get my shit together. I can't find my fucking keys.
Okay.
Where are they?
I don't know.
I promise myself every single time we have an interaction like this that I'll never talk to him that way again.
When you drink, you just kind of...
What? I'm an asshole when I drink. I know. You told me before. Why do you have to be on my case about shit? I'm just trying to live my life.
That's not what I was going to say.
Charlie, can you
have a
talk
bit
about
of
right
a
now?
Hard
I'm
time
late.
Functioning?
I'm late. I need to get out the door.
Oh, okay. Hey, your keys are right there on the table.
It only happens when I'm on a family level of closeness with someone, when I feel like I have their unconditional love. That's the only time I feel safe enough to be a fucking asshole. It often happens when there's something frustrating going on outside of us. I'm frustrated with the situation. I take it out on him. I think about my parents. I think about how often they speak to each other this way. And within my family, the way that I have adopted this way of talking as well. With my parents, I'm always waiting for the banal accident that will break them into a rage. My dad driving in the car.
Greg, can you slow down? I am driving slow. Do you want to drive? Greg, you're scaring me.
I saw a video of them when they were young, first married. I was a baby.
We'll do a Zoom on that thing.
My dad was asking my mom to change the recording settings on a video camera. I braced myself. This is the exact type of frustrating situation that would fly them into a rage. She can't find the button. He's telling her how to find the button, but she still can't find it. And he's like, why can't you just find the button? And she's like, why do you even want me to fucking do this stupid fucking video camera? I hate you.
What's a Zoom?
You turn that ring with the thing sticking out of it.
This thing?
The peg sticking out of the land. Yeah.
This thing? Yeah. To where? Which way?
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. The tenderness. Where did that tenderness go? Where did it come from? I've become an abusive partner. And the more he takes the abuse, the worse it gets. I'm rewriting my Heartbreak Mermaid puppet play for my friend's wedding. I write in Garamond because of Devin, even though I don't really like him anymore. The thought of him reminds me of the way I used to feel as soon as I came, masturbating, when I was a Catholic teenager. Ashamed, disgusted, and confused. This is my fifth trip to the shared bathroom on the top floor of an incredibly expensive and artfully decorated, rustic, hipster lodge in the Catskills. I'm hungover.
Oh, babe, can I...
No, no, I really don't want any witnesses.
One of my best friends, who also happens to be one of my ex-girlfriends, and who also so happens to be marrying someone from Nova Scotia, of all places, asked me yesterday if I want to be part of the bridal party. I said yes. And I'm terrified that I'll be vomiting by the time the wedding ceremony starts at 3.
Aww. Poor hungover sweetie.
I know, I feel like shit.
As is to be expected, Charlie's bedside manner is impeccable.
Can I get you anything?
No.
Something fizzy?
I don't think anything's gonna stay down.
I fall asleep. I wake up an hour later. Charlie is still sitting in the tiny room.
Why don't you go and have a good time?
I'll stay here with you.
Okay.
Thanks for being here with me.
Of course.
Okay, I gotta go back. Oh my God.
Okay.
Okay, I'll be right back.
In addition to agreeing to be a groomsmaid, I have agreed to do a performance at midnight. Initially, I was terrified I'd be too drunk by then to perform, but now, of course, the thought of alcohol awakens the bile in my stomach. All smells are puke-inspiring. The ceremony.
So we're here today to witness the union of Ian and Raven in holy, unholy matrimony.
I'm taking deep breaths and concentrating. Don't vom. Don't vom. Don't vom.
Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping. For only the hand of life can contain your hearts. And stand together, yet not too near together. For the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow.
The groomsmaid I'm paired with is from Nova Scotia and looks just like Devin.
And I'd have a pause and be like, is one of them called Seamus?
Don't vom. Don't vom. Don't vom.
It is no secret that for most of my life, I have hopelessly and often helplessly searched for a true love. The kind of love you read about in fairy tales.
My friend and her love say their wedding vows. It's the kind of wedding that's perfectly idiosyncratic, perfectly romantic. Perfectly, untraditionally perfect. They're in the kind of love that I always dreamed of for myself. And it's hard not to think of Devin and what might have been.
You fill a part of my soul that I didn't know was empty. And if you die, I won't be able to go on living without you.
I talked myself out of this type of love's existence. Is it impossible for two dreamers to be together? Does it always have to be one balloon and one string? What would two balloons do? Float away, I guess. And two strings would drag, limp, on the ground. The problem is that, I mean, no one is ever completely a balloon or completely a string.
And if time and love will let us, I hope to spend the rest of my life waking up day after day, and choosing you.
I don't vomit. The ceremony is over. While everyone's drinking at the reception, I'm getting ready for the performance at midnight. The tech isn't working.
No. Like, I mean, it's not supposed to be this bright. It's supposed to be half as bright.
Charlie is making it his problem, even though it's not.
didn't realize you wanted me to plug it into the dimmers.
Thank you. How am I going to get this up?
I'm trying to help you. Why are you yelling at me?
The performance goes great. I flirt with the Nova Scotian groomsmaid all night while Charlie quietly sits behind me. We're back from the wedding. We're sitting in a red booth at a rockabilly vegan restaurant called Luann's. There's romantic 60s Hawaiian rock music playing. I notice the ambience is like something out of a Wong Kar-wai movie. I think about how I can never share enjoyment of such things with Charlie because he doesn't notice them.
Hmm. Quite the ambiance in here, huh? I was looking at your face during the wedding ceremony. And I knew you were hungover, but it seemed like all you were thinking about was how disappointed you were in our relationship or something.
I have to say what I'm thinking.
Well,
I can't keep keeping secrets inside. I can't keep doing it.
You're right. I was thinking that.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of hard to go to a wedding like that and not have to sit in the reality that committing to our relationship has meant telling myself over and over again that that version of love doesn't exist.
Wow.
You don't want me with abandon. Like, you don't love me with abandon.
But I don't really do anything with abandon. It's just not who I am or what I do.
We both know what the next sentence should be. The next logical move in the conversation, based off of everything that's been said. We look into each other's eyes. We're both thinking it. I guess we should break up then.
Do you want to go home and watch TV?
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is love? What is it really? Completely accepting someone and all their beauty and weakness? Accepting the way that they love you, no matter how that may be? How much of yourself do you let go of in order to live as one? After the night at Luann's, I went to Newfoundland for a performance residency where they housed me and paid me and fed me for a month. I get crushes on people on the trip.
Hey, baby.
Charlie and I talk about opening our relationship.
The thing is, I can't trust that you wouldn't fall in love with someone else.
I'm a fucking hypocrite.
The one time that you tried to platonically spoon, we made out, fell in love, and now we've been dating for 3 years. Do you know what I mean?
I made art, hitchhiked on the Trans-Canadian Highway, smoked cigarettes in an opium den-like gay bar with a grand piano and a massive candelabra, thinking about how I wanted to be buried in this bar, and then also about how much Charlie would hate it, think it was corny. I noticed myself thinking that it's corny too. I imagine my entire life lived without enjoying moments like these. Now that I know that even in my solitude, I enjoy them less just because I see the world through his eyes, I know that I'm going to end it with Charlie. I have to. If one were going to be with someone forever, Charlie would be the perfect person to do such a thing with. I can even imagine him slowly breaking down over time, slowly setting himself free. But someone once told me, you should never get into a relationship with the hope to crack the egg. I think about Leonard Cohen again. I'm so afraid that I'm doomed to love as he loved, many separately and at the same time. I think of something he said in a documentary I heard once.
I pray that a loving memory exists for them too. The precious ones I overthrew for an education in the world.
And you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind, and you know you can trust her.
I don't want to overthrow my precious ones for an education in the world. I open the door. Neither of us bat an eye or a heartbeat. No kiss, no hug, no sex. We lie down together, and he holds me until the dread goes away and I fall asleep.
I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of 6 darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. You understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
We wake up. I feel the dread. And he holds me until it goes away and I have the strength to face the day.
How come we didn't fuck yesterday? We always fuck when I come back.
I don't know. I guess I felt... You feel kind of distant or something.
We don't say anything anymore because we both know where the conversation will end if we begin it. The more time that passes, the more my nerve to end it dissolves. The more I return to a state of questioning. Once again, I'm at a loss for how to make a decision. Doesn't committing to someone mean you just keep trying?
I like trying.
How do you know when it's time to stop
trying?
If
you keep trying, eventually you'll figure it out.
You'll have new problems to try to fix.
It's like meditating. It feels good at the beginning, and then it starts to hurt. And if you just stay still, then it starts to feel good again.
When does it become bad to try to keep loving somebody?
Is loving somebody for your whole life dumb?
When you decide that it's time to stop trying to love
somebody. Is that something that we need to forget about?
You have entered TTBU.
What's TTBU?
Trying to break up. It's a very extremely long, excruciating part of every relationship.
I see. I don't think we're in TTBU. I think we're in BTABU.
What is that?
It's both thinking about breaking up. We're not breaking up. We're just thinking about it.
I don't know, Ka. That's textbook TTBU.
It's Friday night. I say that we should probably talk about...
So, Charlie.
...things.
We should probably have that conversation, don't you think?
Probably tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Okay.
Or maybe even Sunday.
Sunday sounds good.
Sunday.
Sounds better.
Like a fool, I start to broach the topic anyway.
Major crazy relationship conversation. I just like
whether or not we're going to commit to trying to solve the problems in the relationship together or whether we're better off apart. I believe that every problem has a solution if you get creative about it. I'm asking him if he wants to get creative with me. And of course, talking about it is like jumping off the precipice. The fate of the conversation is as certain as gravity.
I think I might just need to be alone. I don't know if I can do this right now.
Come here. Come here.
The first feeling I feel is relief. The decision is being made, and we both want it. It's the only way that we'll both get out of this. I knew I'd never be able to do it unless we did it together. We can't even say the words, breaking up, but we both know that we are.
Thank you.
I want to fuck him for the first time in months.
I want you to come.
I feel like this version of myself that I kind of want.
I see only the most beautiful things about our relationship.
I like doing things for you. I like hearing.
Only the ways that it works and works so well.
We're a puppetry power couple.
Only the ways that I will regret this for the rest of my life if I don't fight for it now. Kissing with feelings for the first time in months. Kissing into sex in the exact way I like to. His perfect dick and his perfect black boxer briefs. Furtively pressing against my perfect clit in his perfect blue boxer briefs. Just like the ones from long ago. Surrendering to the feeling, even though I can't imagine how it will feel to fuck towards no future. It turns out it feels pretty good. He goes down on me and I come almost immediately. I couldn't hold it. I liked that I couldn't hold it. And I feel the way it feels to put his cock inside me. Never again. A cock that fits so perfect. We look into each other's eyes until we come at exactly the same time. I cry more. We take a shower. He washes me from head to toe.
Favorite part.
I still want to watch Star Trek.
We try to watch Star Trek. We make fun of it. It makes me cry more.
I'll never find someone I can watch Star Trek with again.
And he holds me until the dread goes away and I fall asleep. I've thought to myself, this could be love. Just sleeping beside him, waking up beside him, every single night until I die. What if that's what love is? I think that it speaks volumes for how compatible we are, that I want to be beside him that much, that way.
What are we going to do? I don't want to remember. I want to go back to sleep where it didn't happen.
Or what didn't happen?
Exactly.
I really have no idea what you're talking about.
Neither do I.
Okay.
Can we pretend it didn't happen for the rest of the day?
Pretend what didn't happen?
Exactly.
Exactly what?
Nothing.
Nothing what?
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all what?
We bike to a cafe. I read out loud a passage from a book that I saw at his place called Unforbidden Pleasures. With any commitment, there is much that it excludes, much that it rejects. Whatever we permit ourselves, we are forbidding ourselves something else. All our ideas for ourselves, our aims, our aspirations, our beliefs, are by definition restrictive. I think about Charlie and my hunger for the world. Why at the beginning do you feel like you can do everything you want because you have this person, and in the middle you start to feel like you could do everything you want if only it weren't for this person? I spill my water, he gets me a new cup. It takes a few months of TTBU before we officially enter BU. We take space till the weekend when we get lonely. We hang out as friends, which feels like hanging out as lovers. It makes me sad, and then we fuck to make the sad go away, and then we pretend like we're not broken up until we say goodbye, and then it's like breaking up all over again. It's been months. It's 7 a.m. I am waking up with the dread, as usual. Charlie isn't here. So I call him. He picks up. It reminds me that we're not together, and I begin crying almost immediately. He listens. He's gentle.
Don't you ever wonder if it was a huge mistake to break up?
Silence. He doesn't know what to say.
Just tell me if you don't. You don't?
No.
As soon as I feel like I'm allowed, or maybe a little earlier than that, I take out Devin's sweater from my big trunk. I wear it for the first time in 2 years. I get a tiny speaker and my breakup music. I get on my bike and I ride. I ride past Dumpster Alley, where I once found my mermaid wave cardboard. I ride past my old job, roomy restaurant. I bike till I hit the beach. I sit on the sand, drinking a king can in a paper bag, and I look out at the sailboats. Sailboats always remind me of Devon.
So many babies.
And that I think about the life that I might have had.
You would go outside and you'd chop down a tree and make firewood and create a fire, which I'd cook a stew over.
I cling to sweater and I tell myself that I loved greatly. That I was loved greatly. And that next time I'll love more gracefully, maybe. I bike home, and I dig for my mermaid getup. The golden waves are curling at the edges now. My ass barely fits into the stocking. I go down into the belly of the city with my accordion, and I take on the mantle of the heartbreak mermaid.
This was the sixth and final episode of The Shadows. Now, a lot of you might be feeling sad that The Shadows is over, but there are things that you can find online that are further goodies to whet your shadow's appetite. First of all, there's Instagram and Twitter at TheShadowsCBC. There's also the real-life Caitlin Prest Instagram, which you can see at Caitlin Prest. And if you go to our website, there are these little audio messages that were sent back and forth between Devon and Caitlin, and you can't hear those anywhere else. This final episode was written, directed, and produced by my favorite radio genius in human, Caitlin Prest. Mitchell Akiyama, aka Charlie, was a principal performer, and you also heard Greg Prest, Caitlin's father, Nancy Prest, Caitlin's mother, Natalie Prest, Caitlin's sister, and Johnny Spence, Caitlin's crush. Special thanks to the School of Making Thinking for staging the wedding scene. SMT is an incredible residency program and school in New York City and upstate New York. If you're an artist and you're looking for a community, I so highly recommend you check it out. Actors in the wedding scene were Radical Fairy, Elliot Feenstra, brilliant writer Ian Field Stewart, and Raven Castle.
Hello, this is Phoebe Wang, aka Sweater. We have one more credit. The clip you heard of Leonard Cohen comes from the incredible documentary by Alan Hall of Falling Tree Productions, with the interview clip courtesy of NRK and Kari Hestemer. And now, we have a message from KP, Caitlin Prest, director of The Shadows.
Hi, it's me, Caitlin, the real Caitlin, the one who made this. I wanted to say thank you for listening. And I also wanted to say that in the making of this show, there were a lot of big questions raised that I hope that you will go on to discuss with friends and family and partners. Questions that I don't think were fully answered in the course of this story. Questions around the ideal of long-term monogamy, romantic love, eternal love, the rightness or the wrongness of cheating, commitment, and many other things that maybe I don't even know came up for you. I also wanted to say, in addition to encouraging you to just discuss the fuck out of everything that you've heard, I read a lot of books when I was making this, and if these questions interest you, I would highly recommend reading any of the following books: All About Love, Bell Hooks, The Course of Love, Alain de Botton, Marriage, A History by Stephanie Kuntz, and Mating in Captivity and the State of Affairs, Esther Perel. And before I sign off, I'm definitely going to be making stuff until I die, so there's going to be more. It just might be a little while, because it takes a while to make things. I want to say to everyone who helped make this a thank you from the bottom of my heart, especially Phoebe Wang and Sharon Machine, my best friend, and Arv and Leslie, who said yes at the very beginning and all the way throughout, and also the people who inspired this piece.